Band Kick It.
What are your thoughts on Kyle Lowry right now?
Well, I think we should set the table first. I mean, this all started with the report from Bruce Arthur for the Toronto Star when he said, you know, about Paul George possibly being available, which we later found out that the whole entire league is available, apparently, from Porzingis to PG-13 to Jimmy Butler. Like Zach Lowe says, kazoos. It's just kazoos in the NBA right now. It's nuts. So it all started there, and then he basically said that Lowry, you know, might leave Toronto.
Right.
And that set him off, man, because he ended up tweeting out that, you know, I don't usually do this too often, but don't believe everything you hear.
Yeah,
now
that's,
we're at this point.
That's pretty interesting, man. It's kind of interesting to hear that coming from any player, because you're kind of giving up leverage a little bit when you do stuff like that. Where you're just like, yeah, you know, I might actually stay, even though like all the reports or sources, I'm doing air quotes right now, sources
you're doing beside a jury did sources
right, and sources say that he might leave or he's not happy in the place, and then you're just like, you know, it might be BS. That kind of like kind of surrender some leverage there, you know.
Well, off the air you were talking a lot about leverage, you and I, and you were saying how we were saying how the teams that Kyle Lowry could possibly go to don't necessarily need him anymore. At least the rumored teams, like the 76ers, is always, I think, a fanboy dream that people like to put together because, you know, he's from Philly. Philly need a point guard. It makes sense. Oh, hey, sorry, they just traded for the number one pick, so scratch them off.
Mm-hmm.
The Spurs apparently have no interest, right. Apparently. And the only one that I really think makes sense, because I'm not going to go through other options here, is the Rockets. I think the Rockets are the only legitimate threat to the Raptors to sign Kyle Lowry. But again, the difference between these teams and the Raptors is that for all these other teams, Kyle Lowry is not the first option. He's their second, third, maybe fourth guy they're going to pursue in free agency. For the Raptors, Kyle Lowry is the clear-cut number one guy. And seeing how sensitive he can be at times, sensitive may be the wrong word to use, but he wears his heart on his sleeve. That kind of stuff might matter to him, you know?
Yeah, that's true. We'd even mention the Brooklyn Nets, man. The infamous Brooklyn Nets.
Well, they're out too.
Yeah, because they just traded for D'Angelo, so. Yeah, you're right. It's down to the Rockets. And he left the Rockets on not the greatest terms, let's just say. So,
I mean, Goran Dragic kind of took his job, and then they basically kicked him to the wayside.
Yeah, and then he got traded to, what, Memphis? Or was that before Memphis? Or, sorry, was that after Memphis? Anyways, yeah, he's been, you know, he's been bounced around the league. And him and Houston were not, he didn't leave Houston on the best of terms. So, it's kind of hard to picture him going back. You know, plus they have Patrick Beverley. That they're also trying to trade, sources say. So,
more sources. Well, I think Patrick Beverley is very easy to move because he's got an $8 million contract in today's CBA.
That's mad cheap.
That's ridiculous. That's like having like me on like a 10-day deal or something.
Yeah, like for what he does for that team, like he's an intricate part to that team to only be getting paid $8 million. Like Andre Iguodala, who's a sixth man on the Warriors, gets paid like $12 million. He's coming off the bench, so.
And apparently he might look to leave too, so.
Yeah, look, I like the summer this year. And it's not even July. And we're talking about trades and free agency and stuff. And the draft hasn't even happened. And we're talking about people moving.
People are already joking around on Twitter and everywhere else that the off-season NBA rumors are better than the entire regular season. And that might be fair to say.
It was Yeah, because we get to live in this like fantasy land. In the off season, where, you know, by the beginning of the next season, everybody's going to be healthy, and then we're all just thinking, like, if everybody just remains healthy throughout the until the end of the season into the playoffs, then this, and this can happen. And can you imagine the combination of this guy and this guy? And yeah, so when the regular season's happening, you kind of, you know, we love basketball, but then we also like imagining what cool basketball would look like, and that's what the free agency allows for us.
Well, before we start to try and figure out what X, Y, and Z is going to be on a certain team here, give me your thoughts on Kyle Lowry potentially leaving the Raptors and what that top destination would be for him. Because I think, do you agree it's the Rockets or no?
I can't think of any other team, to be honest. Like, I really can't. So it has to be the Rockets. If he leaves, we can be on the brink of the teardown. Yay.
Yay. 100%. How could it not be?
Yay. How could it not? I mean, some people like watching the Raptors win. The Raptors have been bad for a long time, until recently. So that's the only way I can picture it being bad. But, you know, this could just be if I'm Masai Ujiri and I'm trying to, you know, mask the rebuilding effort. This is kind of like the first step. It's like, we tried to sign him and he wouldn't agree to the contract and he went to Houston. So we're going to develop young talent.
Well, I mean, what he said in his pre-draft press conference is that the Raptors are prepared for a variety of situations. A lot of that is obviously contingent on the domino that is Kyle Lowry. But right. He also did say there's about five different scenarios that are likely for them. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't get into details of it, but I think we could kind of piece together what some of them are. Let's just go to the first easy one here. If the Raptors re-sign Kyle Lowry, what would they have to add next to become quote-unquote contenders? Or is that even possible? Because I don't think it is.
They would have to, like, hypothetically, they would have to add something like Paul George or something. They'd have to make some sort of trade for him. And then I don't really see, like, there is a trade, you know, that exists. It's not really an amicable trade. Like, I don't think the Pacers would want it. But that trade with, like, I think we brainstormed that the Damari Carroll trade.
Well, it's got to be Damari or JV for money's sake.
Right, and then you'd have to trade probably likely Powell.
Powell or DeLon Wright would likely be one of the two, plus a pick.
Right. And that's and just then you're for getting to the point rental.
Where you go, I don't know about this anymore.
Yeah, it's a year rental, right? And Powell, I would rather have Powell for like 5 years, 6 years than a year of Paul George. Because then even if you get Paul George, it's like, are we really making it over the Cavs? I mean, maybe. Maybe.
Well, I mean, this leads to so many more questions. That's the beauty of the NBA right now, is this is literally the perfect like barbershop conversation where there's so many things leading to another. Mm-hmm. Is people are very swift to bring up right now Paul George's tweet. When he said, you know, put me and DeMar together in Toronto and let's get right. Like, let's basically, you know, let's win.
You're right, right.
That was from, I want to say like 2012 at this point. I have to go back and dig it up. But people like to point to that and say, hey, he might sign long term here. I don't know where the hell it's coming from because, you know, his agents pretty much made it clear that LA is his number one choice.
To the Lakers. Like, I don't know, you can just, the only other way to make it more clear is like to stamp it on his forehead, right? And when he plays, like, you see it every time. It's like going to Lakers 2018.
Yeah. So I don't understand where that narrative is coming from aside from a tweet. Now, the second thing that a lot of Raptors fans are pointing to right now about why they should perhaps, you know, try and stay contenders is Cleveland kind of has a crazy owner.
Oh, but they have no GM. And they have GM right now.
They have no GM. They have no assistant GM. And apparently they let him go without LeBron's consent. Now, I know people like to say, well, LeBron is the GM, the coach. He does everything there. And that he might have known. Look, I don't know if you guys heard. He had an interview. I want to say it was last week. I can't remember what it was on. I think it was on the Uninterrupted. Mm-hmm. And he was basically saying how his family and his mom and his wife and everybody was like, you know, you don't have to go back to Cleveland. Like, we know you don't get along with Dan Gilbert. And LeBron was saying how, no, I got to go back and win a title for the land. I got to show the kids there that, you know, you can make it out. There's a way out, blah, blah, blah. Right. All the, like, very, like, heroic LeBron stuff that you hear from him. However, there was this huge distaste you could feel for Dan Gilbert still. So now people are saying with all of this that's going on with the Cavs right now and what's pretty much dysfunction, will he leave the Cavs next season? And if he does, and you're the Raptors, does it make sense not to stay contenders? That's a really long-winded explanation, but there's so many layers to the NBA right
now. Look at you peeling back every single one of them. I mean, from the top, right? But, like, losing your GM and assistant GM, who happened to be, like, probably one of the, like, they're probably like top five GMs in the league. Like, I can't, like, really think of anybody that's better than what David Griffin was doing with the Cavs when they had, like, no cap space and they were still adding stuff. They had all
thank you.
And they're making all these, like, trade exceptions, like, so to make filler for contracts. And it was, like, it was ridiculous how much stuff you could get on that team with such limited assets.
Yeah, because people like to rip on Griffin, and they like to say, you know, well, what did he really do? I mean, look at Channing Frye, not working out now. Richard Jefferson, meh.
That worked out last year.
Bust.
All of that worked out last year.
Like, but when you look at what was available to him, sure, he whiffed on Bogut and Deron Williams, who hasn't made a shot since May 29th, by the way. We're still counting. I don't understand what people expected him to do. He had no cap space, and he made all these moves, and he kept the Cavs contenders. And he did a lot of things to actually maximize what they had.
Like, they had Mozgov, they had Dele, right? Those weren't part of the squad to begin with. Mozgov and Dele weren't just, like, chilling there, right? And they also had to – they picked up RJ. They picked up J.R. Smith and Shumpert. man, they got Shumpert and JR. I can't even remember what they got. It was like for dirt, basically. Like, I think they gave him like a draft pick and like some random crap, right? And they
pretty
got
much
JR Smith. And it was just like JR Smith and Iman Shumpert, both of which were, I mean, JR Smith was like a major contributor to the team for the past 3 years. JR Iman Shumpert, not so much, but like, it's been worth it, man. And he's done it with basically not, like, he's basically done all of this with like a rock and a stick, right?
Pretty
and he,
much.
And he
like,
built the
like channel. Literally, no, seriously, when you think about it, what they have, sure, a generational player in LeBron James, but for what they've had to add around him, he's done a great job. And he also had, I guess Dan Gilbert's strategy is to go back to just hoping that, you know, a once in a lifetime player is going to be born in the same state and wants to play in Cleveland, because let's face it, nobody wants to play in Cleveland.
Yeah, exactly. And even Kevin Love didn't want to play in Cleveland. Like, he wanted to leave for the Lakers, and David Griffin had to like negotiate that trade for Andre Wiggins to get Kevin Love. Like, he had to do all of this. I think this is a severe oversight by the owner and like realizing how much that David Griffin was actually doing for this team.
But when you look at his history and his track record, he's never re-upped a general manager during his time. So this is all par for the course for a crazy, crazy Dan Gilbert, who has a weird obsession with the Pistons, by the way. I know he's like from there and, you know, loves the Detroit basketball in the 80s with Lampier and those guys. But, right, man, it's weird. Like, Chauncey Billups is the next GM now, apparently. So one thing I found really difficult when preparing for this podcast in particular is I had so many things written down, man. I had so much NBA stuff where I'm like, where to start?
Right. Like, Chauncey Billups was doing TV before he became, or before this negotiation or like sort of like stuff, like talks about him getting the GM spot. Like, he was doing TV, bro. Like, he wasn't like a scout for a team or something like that. He was like, yeah, he was just on TV being an analyst. So, I'm skeptical of that, and this ties all the way back to the beginning of when you asked me, is like, does it make sense for the Raptors to try and stay like a contender status with, you know, this turmoil in the Cavs front office? I guess so, man. You could, because now at this point, when you're going to have what looks like basically a rookie GM, coming in, he's probably not going to be privy to all the things that are happening, you know, with the team specifically and then around the league, and then he's gonna have to pick up the sticks on like what the team is scouting, what the team is like looking for to surround LeBron with, like any sort of trades that David Griffin was like organizing before. So like that Paul George or Jimmy Butler trade, those are nixed, and you're gonna have to start those over. And now that I'm the Bulls or the Pacers, I'm like scrap everything that we were doing, all those like the negotiating, all of the like, you know, all of like the handshakes and, you know, like kind of like nudges. It's like, here, you pick me up on this later, or we'll get like a second rounder off of you. Or no, we're starting from ground zero, and they're probably trying to like work him over now. They're probably going to ask for a lot more than they were doing with David Griffin.
Well, to clarify something with the Bulls and Cavs trade, I think that was all bullshit to begin, to be honest, because Jerry Reinsdorf, the Bulls owner, is not exactly friends with Dan Gilbert. The two don't get along. That's pretty, you know, I don't want to say well known, but there's just a distaste between those two, and I don't see why he would want to give Jimmy Butler to the Cavs to help them out in any way possible when the Cavs have zero assets to give back to him. Like, what are they going to give back? Kevin Love and a first-round pick in 2024? They don't have a lot of first-round picks coming up, right? So I don't understand where that rumor was developing from. The Paul George one, okay, maybe, because it's the same thing you said with Kyle Lowry. The Raptors have minimal leverage. Mm-hmm. Or sorry, Kyle Lowry has minimal leverage with the Raptors. The Pacers have minimal leverage when it comes with Paul George now. He's made it clear where he wants to go. He's told them he's going to opt out, and they're kind of handcuffed. So they're going to have to take whatever they can get.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It's, I guess if you're the Raptors, it pays to stick around right now, because the Cavs can slip up. LeBron is just like, yo, peace easy, I'm going to the Lakers next year or the Clippers next year, right? And then there's just like, it's just a power vacuum in the East, right? And if Boston doesn't sign Gordon Hayward this offseason, then, you know, Raptors could be on top. Just, you know,
could be.
It's one of those where the leader in a country like dies, like a dictatorship or something like that, and it dies, and then everybody's just kind of like looking around for who the next dude is, and you just like and then you just like, you know, nobody steps forward, so you just like take one step, and then people are looking at you, and then you take your second step, and then people are looking at you still, then the third, and then the fourth, and then you finally step into the light, and then it's you. Then you're the next leader. That's what. Right? That's totally what can happen if LeBron leaves the East, man. Because he's just been like the king of the East for since he's been in the league, basically. Since
he's a monolith.
Since they lost to the Magic, like after the Magic, he's just been the dude in the East. So when he leaves, like people are gonna start looking around, and it could be the Raptors. This is like the one scenario. Like if I'm Masai Ujiri, or if I'm like the team who wants to like guys, we just keep it together, you know, continuity. Everybody will get better. Continuity, continuity, continuity. I mean, if you're part of that division of Raptors fandom or the front office, then you know you're just hoping LeBron leaves. Basically,
if LeBron leaves, Cleveland is pretty much Chernobyl, because it'll be like a nuclear meltdown. There'll be nothing left in that city. Here's my issue, man. Is a core of, let's just hypothetically say, Lowry, DeRozan, I guess we'll go Ibaka for now, or Paul George. Let's just say Lowry, DeRozan, and you can insert a superstar you like here, because that'll be the last max guy, and the Raptors will pretty much be capped out after that. Right. Is that good enough to beat a team like a Boston or a Philadelphia? Because those are two very hot up-and-coming teams that people like to point to and say, hey, those are the next teams in the Eastern Conference once LeBron James leaves. Right. If he leaves,
I think they can beat Boston.
Is that enough? You think so? Okay.
I think they can beat Boston. I'm surprised that you put in Philadelphia. You're just like, Philadelphia is about to just like become a 60-win team.
I don't think it will be, but a lot of people like to talk to them like they are right now. People are going crazy between, man, Fultz, Simmons, Saric, Covington, and then they go, you know, Joel Embiid.
They're going to have two rookies, basically, in Ben Simmons and Fultz, who they're probably going to draft, right? So
I understand everything you're saying right now. People like to hype up the Sixers. I think they just feel it's cool with the process narrative and all that stuff.
Okay. I like, you they know, I love the 76ers. Man, I watch more 76ers games this year than ever, and then I probably should have, right?
Me too. So, but they're fun. They're fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm down for that team. I don't think they're going to be good next year. Maybe the year after next. But, yeah, I'm down for that team. I just don't think they're going to be amazing next year. But yeah,
if you don't think they're going to be amazing, then that really only leaves two teams in the East. Maybe three, maybe.
Right.
Cavs, right, as long as LeBron's there. Boston, because they have picks until, I'm pretty sure, until the league dissolves. And then Wizards.
Don't they have, like, three first-rounders for the next 3 years? Like, they have Brooklyn, Sac, and, like, the Clippers for, like, 1 year. And then 1 year they have, like, the Lakers. Or 1 year they have the Kings. It was, like, it's crazy.
Dude, they have so many picks that came in roster, all the players that made those picks.
Yeah, that's wild, bro.
That's insane.
Marcus Smart or Avery Bradley is getting the boot.
Yep.
Basically.
And then what?
I mean, then they have probably, like, the next generation. I mean, the way they're building their team is basically, the way they're stockpiling the assets is, like, they're just waiting for the generational guy now. Because this year they could have done... They could have gotten Fultz in first, right? And then they would have, like, maybe they're not re-signing Isaiah and maybe trade him or something. But is Fultz really, like, the dude? Like, is he the next dude? So I think they're just, like, waiting, biding time until it's, like, this is the one. This is the guy. This is the next Derrick Rose, Steph Curry, LeBron, KD. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with you on that part. I think one of them could be RJ Barrett in 2019, but we'll get into that when that time comes. I'm just, you know, all year you and I have been talking about Boston in particular, and they're so interesting because they have so many picks, and what if they win the lottery? So they won the lottery. Now they traded that pick, and they have more picks, and now we're left with more of a mystery than before. And for Danny Ainge, dude, he put his entire – I don't want to use the word legacy, but we'll use what's going to define him, because people always suffer from recency bias, and the last thing they'll see potentially is this trade. Like, he's kind of put – his reputation on the line here.
That's true. I mean, I read this quote once where it goes, you can make every correct decision and still lose, right? And basically, that's what he's doing right now. I'm not saying that he's going to specifically lose, but like every decision he's made so far has been the correct one. Because if they're trying to win multiple championships or even one championship, trading down in what people think is a loaded draft is the correct decision because you're getting another draft pick in a later draft, right? And you still have, like, they went down from 1 to 4, and they're still going to get, like, Tatum or Josh Jackson, right? So it's still going to be a good prospect. But if you keep doing stuff like that constantly, over and over and over, where it's the right decision for, like, you know, marginal benefit right now, or you sacrifice a little bit right now for a prospective greater future, if you keep doing that, then, you know, the future never arrives, and with right now, you're just suffering constantly, right? So it's possible to be happening right now, but they're waiting on the next bro. They're waiting on the next generational dude. I don't know.
Don't explain it to Celtics fans right now.
if you fail in never finding that next generational dude, then everybody's going to look around and be like, what the hell just happened?
They're already pissed. They already think that's what's happened.
Right? So
it's depressing to talk to Celtics fans right now. But you guys are fine. You have tons of assets. But we have the number one pick. And now what do we have? I'm like, okay, Jesus. All
right. Sorry,
I brought it up.
So, but the one thing is right. It's like if nothing comes out of this, right, if they don't get, you know, the next amazing guy, then they're just going to be like, yeah, so we got all these assets. And then what? You know, and then they're going to look at Danny Ainge as like, great. We were good for a while. I mean, because we're thinking, remember, if it was the Raptors, and we're just like, man, what a time to be alive, right? But you're a Boston fan, and you're like, bro, we have 16 or 17 championships. We have the most championships in the league. Like, when's the next?
Yep.
You know, you know, the clock is ticking. I think, when was the last time they won? It was 2008? 2009? So it's like, it's almost been a decade since they last won. And it's like, when's the next one, bro? When?
they've been spoiled.
Like, they're that guy that's just like constantly looking at the clock, or they have the room with just all clocks in it, waiting for like one of them, for them all to strike at 12 or something.
Yes, I mean, they got fortunate for years with Bill Russell, literally, you know, showing up and beating the Lakers because they just could not beat Bill Russell and the Celtics.
Right.
And then they got used to winning, and then they were bad for a bit, and then Danny Ainge pulled off this what some people like to point to as the first big three, but. Mm-hmm. That's subjective. Mm-hmm. That's very subjective. Mm-hmm. And then they won again. And then they had some success. And then they bottomed out. And now they're looking like they're back to getting back to that. What would you do if you were him, actually? I know this is not really on – it's not exactly like Raptors discussion, but it is related to the Raptors, so I think it's important.
Right. If I'm Danny Ainge, I'm trying to finagle that that Gordon Hayward free agency, like that signing. Trying to make a jab at Jimmy Butler. So you're trying to, like, this is like, wait, when you have 9 draft picks over the next 3 years, you might as well just throw some fat into the fire, you know, like just try to trade 1 or 2 of them trying to get Jimmy Butler. Then you have Jimmy Butler, Gordon Hayward, Al Horford, Isaiah Thomas. Like, that's some real stuff, dude. That's a real squad to deal with. Then we're cooking with gas.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Right, so the first step for me, I got to make the signing, basically. I don't know what you have to say or do when you're Boston. I guess Boston, you're just like tradition. I don't know what Gordon Hayward's really into because he lives in Utah, right? So there's not like...
Yeah.
So like, there isn't really... No comment. I mean, like his wife loves Utah, right? And... I remember, like, her baby was wearing, like, a Boston onesie, and they were, like, laughing at it. So I guess they're, I don't know, maybe they're into comedy or something. but, yeah, I don't really know how you sell people on Boston, to be, to be 100%. Like, I don't really know how you sell somebody on Boston other than, like, we've been winning. Our crowds are amazing. And then we're trying to continue to win. And then we have a billion assets. Join in on the potential. Like, they're kind of, like... If the process had a stage 2, or like if there was a advanced version or late stage process, this is what they would be. It's like, good team, tons of assets. Let's do this. We don't have the superstar yet, but we have everything else. Get into this squad.
I view the Celtics as that like historically powerful college football team that plays in the middle of nowhere, but they're really good, and you know they're really good just because they've won so much. So you kind of overlook the other things that you know you might not like weather. tax rate, the fact that when you go around, and Boston isn't exactly large in area, it's kind of a small town,
right?
But it's a stage above a small town, but everybody still would recognize you and know you because it's not that big, and because everybody's such hardcore Celtic fans and just sports fans in general. So your privacy is not exactly, you know, to the fullest. And if you play like shit, they're going to be all over you, like the New York media. So it's not for everyone.
Right. Exactly. So I'm trying to, you know, I don't know. It's hard for me. Me personally, it would take a lot of convincing to get me to move to Boston right now. But if also if I was a player, I'd be like, you know, California is nice. You know, I like the really West Coast. You know, games come on earlier on the West Coast. Like, what's it like if we're just talking about like life wise? Would you rather live in Portland or Boston? Like, quality of life.
Ooh, that's tough. I haven't been to Portland, so it's tough to say. But quality of life, like, can I just slide down a little bit further to California? I'm biased. I love California, even despite their high tax rate. I would still take it.
Right, but like.
And But the tax rate is something I don't think people talk about enough, to be honest. Like, I think that is something that'll help Houston too, because there's no state tax.
Mm-hmm.
So they can not necessarily overpay some of these players, but these players can collect slightly more money because there's no tax.
Exactly. So I'm missing it. I don't see it when free agents sign in Boston other than the winning culture thing. So if I'm trying to sign Hayward, you know, Brad Stevens, He's being your dude. Like, he's the one who saw you, the spark in you when you were a kid, basically, and decided to sign you to or not sign you, but like to recruit you to Butler when no other team would. And yeah, I've got that. Got picks. Great town, great sports city, great crowds. You know, the team is pretty good right now. Let's do it. You know? I guess
that's really it.
Yeah. That's about it. Like, I don't, like, is there like a pop in like hip hop? I don't really think Gordon Hayward is. Gordon Hayward's a gamer, right? He plays like a League of Legends. So I guess he can kind of, you know, if the city life isn't that great, you know, he's married, he's a gamer, he's got a kid. So, you know, it doesn't need to be that amazing.
Well, don't get me wrong. Like, there's lots around Boston that's good. It's obviously a good city. City of champions, quote unquote. I mean, you got Cape Cod just up the road there that you can go to if you're a secluded getaway kind of guy. You got New York City a little while away. Like, there's lots around it. And that's not to say Boston is garbage by any means. There's a lot of like fun historical things to do in Boston as well.
Yeah, this has got the history.
It's truly a sports town.
Yeah. So when Hayward is signed to Boston, then like it's a dogfight. Or maybe, I don't even know if it's a dogfight. Maybe they're like, they might be clearly better than the Raptors. That's interesting to look at, because if the Raptors and the Celtics are like at the same level of like ability right now, and they sign Hayward like that, I would assume that makes the Celtics prospectively, you know, like on paper, better than the Raptors.
I would think so.
Yeah,
but that's all contingent upon like what do the Raptors do, you know?
I mean, I hate going back, over this, the but cap, it's so bro. True. They're over the cap. Yeah. They're in the luxury tax if they re-sign
Lowry. I was literally going to say two things. One, it's all contingent on Lowry. And two, even if Lowry does come back, they're still going to be hard-lined on the cap.
Right? So, like, they're basically just set to, like, if they're not making a trade, they're just going to chill. There's nothing to do. They're probably going to try and see if they can find somebody at the minimum or mid-level. I don't even know if you get the mid. I think you get the mini mid-level when you're in the tax. So, like, it's minuscule amounts of money, so. I mean,
he's talking like a Jared Sollinger type player again, potentially.
Right, and you know, it worked out last year because they made the trade using him. But I just don't see it.
Me neither, and I don't know what they can do. Like, we all know what they can do, and that's make a trade for a cap relief, kind of like what the Lakers did with dumping Mozgov. You know, but the cost to trade rid of a guy with Mozgov was the number 2 pick in the draft a couple years ago.
Yeah, that's a huge, huge, huge cost.
Yeah.
Right, so I'm not really down to be trading like Norman Powell. I don't want to trade Norman Powell because I think he's really good, right? So I don't really think, you know, if we're going to offload Damari and we're giving away Norman Powell, I'm like, okay, then now we just have no wings.
See, I don't think they're going to trade Powell at all, period, because I know he trains in the Bay Area and out on the West Coast in the offseason and lives there, but for him to be at the meeting with Casey, Lowry, and DeRozan a few weeks ago, well, is that just like by mistake? He just happened to be eating at the same restaurant. Like, I don't think so. I think he's there for a reason.
Yeah, yeah, he's probably there for a reason. I wonder how much stock the team is putting into that player. Like Norman Powell?
Yeah, I'm curious.
Because he's obviously very good. And I think this is 2 years in a row where he basically saved the team from elimination when he was slotted into the lineup and was playing significant minutes. So how much, like, how much stock are they really putting into him? Because he's a shooting guard that is, you know, he's short, but he can also kind of play small forward because his arms are real long. And he's kind of reminding me, not because of the same skill set, but because of the same physical tools. You know, Draymond Green is, like, really short for a power forward. Like, he's 6'7", right? And sometimes he's playing center, but he's got these long-ass arms. And, you know, Norman Powell is basically, like, the same thing. Like, he's short for a small forward. Like, he's 6'4". But he's got these gargantuan-length arms that he's, you know, serviceable as small forward that is making him, you know, worthwhile at small forward. So maybe they just put, I don't know if Dwayne Casey is down for that, to be playing him at small forward and just be like, you're the small forward now. But that's, the more I think about it and the more I, you know, I'm looking at it, it's just like, maybe just play him at small forward. Just start him, bro. Like, is anybody really punishing you at small forward other than LeBron and KD?
Paul George, so. Maybe? I mean, you look around the league and a lot of teams are playing smaller lineups now.
It's right.
No secret. I mean, that's a trend. And having a guy like Norman Powell doesn't mean you have to play him 48 minutes. You can get creative with a lot of things that you do rotationally. You can pre-switch your defense, which we saw Golden State do to the Cavs at will during the finals. Like, there's a lot of different tactics you can use now in basketball to hide guys.
Right, exactly. So when, you know, when we're looking at him and like, oh, he's a little bit small for a shooting guard, and like he's small for a small forward, but like every year put him in the starting lineup or he's playing significant minutes, and like this guy saves the team from floundering in the series. Like, DeMarre Carroll wasn't even getting minutes in some of the games, you know what I mean? So maybe
DeMarre,
so maybe you just put him into the small forward spot, because in the draft isn't looking too hot for the Raptors. You know, they're picking what, 23rd, right?
Yeah, I was just about to say.
Right.
I'm thinking 23rd. I was wondering, you get 23, 27 that I'm looking at right now. And I'm like, wait, am I looking at the wrong sheet?
No, it's 23rd, right? So it's like they're not really drafting anybody significant.
More than likely, no. I mean, you look at the draft and you go, okay, there's a handful of names you could go through and say, yeah, I could see him being there. But like every NBA draft, they're mostly top heavy. And that's not an indictment on not having enough good players. It's just, the nature of the beast is that the teams at the top are usually going to get the better players because, you know, that's the way a lottery works.
Right. So when you're looking at your draft board for the Raptors, who do you have on it? Because I remember last year we actually had people to look at, and then they kind of like, I don't want to be too harsh on them, but they squandered it. They squandered that Knicks pick, dude.
I think so.
Because Scal.
But
Scal.
Yeah, I don't think they should have taken Scal that high. But I think they could have maybe traded back. There's so many different things we could look at.
He was available with both picks.
That's the thing I was going to say. Is the second pick, I was kind of surprised they took him. I'm sorry, they took Pascal over Scal.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense to me.
And, of course, a lot of people are saying, you know, Pascal. Or sorry, not Pascal. Now I'm all mixed up. Scal soft, and he doesn't have the drive. And insert any negative comment you could put here.
All but right, man. When he's styling on people in Sacramento, which he started to do when DeMarcus Cousins was gone, then everybody's going to be like, oh my God, this is going to be the Marcus Aldridge situation again. I swear, man, I swear it's going to be the same situation. We're like, we had him there twice. Why didn't we draft him? And like when we see him like crushing the league on Sacramento, we're going to be like, I can't believe this happened again.
Like, the skill, I can honestly see that.
All of his skills translate to the NBA, and like just people are like, oh, he's too small or he's too soft. I'm like, do you not? He's like, what, I think he was like 7'2", and he runs like a gazelle. Like, he runs like Blake Griffin, bro.
He's just kind of raw. But we saw, you know, stages that he can develop, and he took those steps late in the season. So let's not talk about Scal. Let's not talk about Scal anymore. Before I even give you a list of guys that I think that we could look at here, and since you're asking that, I got to ask you, what do you think the Raptors' needs are first? Because I feel like most teams draft according to need, or if the talent is there and this is the player that you just can't say no to, they take them. But in the case of the Raptors, I feel like they have certain needs they need to address. So what do you think they are?
They need a small forward, unless they're going to play Powell to start Powell. And they also need a center, like a starting center. Like JV is probably should be traded, but they need a center.
I don't know if that'll happen, but I agree with you.
Yeah, they need a center. I mean, they need a center, or unless they think Poeltl's going to become the center for the team. Because Poeltl's, you know, he's more agile than JV. He's got some bounce to him. I remember the dunk, right? He's got the tools. Yeah. He's got the tools, like, to actually be legit center, starting center. I don't. He's not going to be, like, a star starting center, but, like, you know, good role player. Like, he's, like, a championship-level player. role player. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, you look at what they have. JV, who unanimously we both agree that if you can trade him, do it. He doesn't fit what's happening in the new NBA. And for what it's worth, to see a guy like Mozgov get traded, there's still hope. Dwight Howard got traded too. So, you know, you can still move big men this league. All right? I was negative as hell before saying that. But we can move a big man is for another big man. Well, we got proved wrong yesterday.
Oh, my goodness.
There's hope. Aside from JV, you're looking at Bebe, Poeltl, and I guess if you want to get creative here, considering that Messiah said they're going to play a new brand of basketball, you can run Pascal as a stretch five.
Do you have more faith in Bebe or Poeltl at this point right now?
I have more faith that we're going to find somebody in this draft.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Woo. Okay. So
look, I think Poeltl can develop into something nice, but I just see him as that off the bench, very smart, versatile second unit kind of guy.
Okay.
I know we're only 1 year in, but he just has that look. Like, I'm not saying he's not going to be a useless player. I think he could be very useful. He's raw. He's young. He has a lot of good intangibles to him. With Bebe, yeah, he's funny. He's jokes. He does good things. He hustles. He's still prone to fouls after being in the league for, what, 5 years now? Can't really shoot. Just rebounds. Like, he's a poor man's DeAndre Jordan. And I'm talking, like, ultra poor.
Poor, yeah.
Homeless, not even man. Using food stamps. Like, you're getting, like, donations. Homeless. Like, you know?
Homeless, man.
Yeah, you're homeless. He's a homeless man's DeAndre Jordan.
He catches lobs, though.
Homeless man's DeAndre Jordan.
He catches lobs. I mean, that's pretty much all he does. I mean, he's not even that good of a rebounder. And he's a shot blocker, but not, like, a good defensive center. Like, he just blocks the shots.
Yeah.
So, and he's going for those pump fakes 24/7. And he's going for pump fakes 24/7, man. I mean, like, anytime you just raise the ball above your head one time and, like, his shoes are left on the ground. He's out.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you tweet about that once a game when he does it, to be honest.
It's hard not to, man. Oh, it's so jarring whenever he does it. Because he never needs to leave the ground. That's just like a high IQ play. It's just like, don't jump. You don't need to.
It drives me nuts. Right. So I'm looking at the draft here. And, you know, center and wing players were obviously the two areas of need that I had as well. But I'm looking at their pick. And they're picking 23. And I go to myself, okay, you're probably not going to get somebody who's going to contribute right away at 23. Like, you might get somebody who can, you know, maybe come off the bench, stuff like that. So I'm looking at these picks and I go, you know, you might as well try and hit a home run and take guys with a high ceiling. Something like, you know, what the Warriors saw with Draymond, what the Raptors ended up getting with Norm Powell. Like, would that not make sense here? Or do you think playing it safe is a better option?
That totally makes sense to me. It's made sense to me for the past 2 years.
Yeah, I just think if you're going to try and get somebody 23, you might as well try and hit a home run. And I'm looking back at Masai Ujiri's history of what he likes to take. He likes guys with length. Mm-hmm. Tons of length. Like, I swear he is trying to build the longest team, and the Bucks just beat him to it. Like, I'm pretty sure that's what he wanted to do.
Right. Okay.
So I'm looking at centers, and there's some guys on the list here that I think are definitely going to go ahead of the Raptors. Now, there's been some talk about them potentially trying to move up, but names that just come up to me right away are Jared Allen of Texas. I mean, he's 6'11", but his wingspan is 7'5.25". And watching Jared Allen play a lot of Texas, I mean, he gets up and down the floor for a big man. He's a one-and-done type player. He probably could have went back and won Big 12 Player of the Year if he came back for his sophomore season, but I get it. He's going to get his money. But he's a player that's still a little bit raw, but there's a lot to like in his game. And if the Raptors were going to trade up and try and get somebody, I think Jared Allen is the ideal target for them. So
okay. That's trade up. One guy.
Yeah, no, I think they would trade up to try and get somebody because Masai keeps saying player development is so important for them. He keeps saying how, you know, you got to develop through the draft with the new CBA and the rules, and basically it encourages you to draft guys and then sign them long term, and just everything points back to player development. So I could see him saying, hey, chances of us getting a free agent this season outside of Lowry is what, slim? Like, we're both saying, I don't know who they're going to get. Right. So that's why I see trading up making a lot more sense than some people are like to say right now.
Okay.
Another guy I think that could be potential at center is I can't even say his name, man. Ike Anegbogo, UCLA, 6'10". Wingspan is off the charts. He's 7 foot, 6 1/4 inches. That's massive wingspan again. That's something that fits the Ajuri, I guess, model, if you want to put it. Didn't do much at UCLA in his freshman season. He's really raw, but he's somebody who has a ton of upside, and that's a word you're going to hear a lot at pick number 23 is upside, potential, ceiling. He's just somebody that I think if you're the Raptors at 23 and he's there,
you can take him.
Why not? Yeah, why not? You know, it goes back to the Scala thing last year. There's certain tools there. He's not the greatest shooter, but if you're looking for somebody who can protect the rim, get up and down the floor, and possibly develop a jump shot because he has the frame to develop one, you know, that's another guy. Before I get into wings, though, I guess, you got anybody else you want to add to centers?
No. I think those are two. I mean, those are two of mine. I was surprised that you went for trade up. I'm like, wow, this guy is a. Who did they have to separate with to trade up? Well, that's the thing. That's like that
Van Vliet. That needs a center?
I mean, like, when you said trade up, right? They're going to have to trade somebody to trade up, right?
I think they would just trade another pick.
Yeah. So they're going to trade their now pick plus the next year's. Like next year's first rounder? Do we even have next year's first rounder?
I think a second or something they might trade. Okay. Again, I think they might trade one of their cluster of guards that they have. I mean, you look at a guy like Van Fleet. He could definitely help you move up. I know people don't want to part ways with him, but this is all contingent upon the Raptors re-signing Lowry. But let's say Masai said that him and Lowry have had conversations and he was working at the Raptors facility as of Tuesday. So that's definitely a good sign. Let's just say they re-sign Lowry. And now we have Lowry, Corey Joseph, DeLon Wright, Fred VanVleet. We're right back to having this logjam at point guard, so moving one of them in a deal makes sense for me as to why the Raptors could move up.
Okay.
Because you look at some of the teams ahead of them, like the Bulls at 16.
Mm-hmm.
They need just about everything, right? people could feed me the whole Rondo bullshit about how, you know, he played good in the postseason. That's the only time Rondo shows up. Aside from that, Rondo doesn't give a damn.
Okay.
I hate to break it to people, sense. Like, you know? Even the Pacers at 18, Pacers, yeah. I'm not saying they're going to move up a lot, but these teams make sense. If you really want to stretch it out.
And you if I'm the Pacers, and, you know, the Pacers probably want their pick, though. They probably won't trade down just because of the Paul George dilemma.
Well, weren't they trading both their picks? Or weren't the Lakers trading both their picks to, you know, the Pacers for Paul George?
Yeah, well, maybe. And then at that point, then sure. They're willing to trade down for stuff.
There's a lot of options there. There's a lot of options I think they could do.
Okay.
You got nobody else at center?
Not really, man. You got. I mean, the center pool is kind of like all the same. It's just like I just want a long dude who is tall, which almost all of them are long and tall. Like they're all got like 7'3", 7'6", 7'2" wingspan, right? Even though some of them might be like 6'10", like Bam. Bam is 6'10". But
Yeah,
I don't know. There's nothing really. Nothing's blowing my doors off at center. You know what I mean?
There's one more that you could possibly say. He has knee issues. It's Harry Giles from Duke. He was former number one recruit in the land, highly touted, supposed to be this next prototypical center, big man that can play, you know, anywhere on the court, run a high screen and roll. Just so much to like about his game, and now he has the knee issue that I don't want to say teams don't know what's going on because I feel like they do and they're just not releasing it. But there's a lot of risk attached to him. So I think he's somebody else, too, that the Raptors might take a look at.
Okay, I crossed him off just because of the knee thing. But if you but if you want to put him on, okay, I'll put him on there.
Well, I mean, he's a former number one recruit. There's a lot of upside with him. So I think he's worth having on just for the sake of alone that the talent's there. But the knee might not be, you know?
Okay.
I guess you're scared of Greg Oden potential.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, yeah. I loved Greg Oden too, and then like his knees, and then people were like, is one leg longer than the other? I don't know. And then his knees exploded again, and then it's just, So I'm just worried about it happening again with Harry Giles. Even though he's gonna be like the 23rd pick or whatever, so it's not that big of a deal. It's just, you know, you're trying to get better, especially in the East, with like what might be a power vacuum soon, right? So you're trying to make sure every single one of these draft picks count in some way, whether they'll be trade fodder or whether they'll be off the bench or they actually become part of the starting lineup. You want them to have some sort of value, right? So if you're a guy that's constantly injured, or if you're just not able to perform because your knees are messed up, then
that's a problem.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, who do you got in the wings?
For wings, I only have like one. There's only been like one dude I've really been looking at, which is like Tyler Linden, right?
Really? Okay.
But that's about it. When we get down to the 20s, nobody's like really popping for me.
It's slim pickings. I mean, there is one guy that stood out to me that is like, he's a project player. He didn't even play in NCAA last year. He played in Australia. Terrence Ferguson, man.
Oh, this Terrence guy, Ferguson. Yeah, the 6'7".
He can shoot.
Right. He can shoot. I mean, I like that. I like that. I like anybody that can shoot. He's from, what, he was playing in Australia, I think?
Adelaide.
Okay. Yeah, so, yeah, I like anybody that can shoot. I think, who was the guy that we were looking at last year that was on the D-League? Oh, his name escapes me right now. Oh, he was, like, 6'7". He was just, like, a sniper. He was on the D-League team. He had, like, blonde hair. Damn, I can't remember his name.
EJ Singler?
Yes! Right? So, he kind of, like, it's just, like, a small forward that can just shoot, and that's all he does. You know, you can find a place in the league for that.
Yeah, that's the guy with, like, Terrence Ferguson could be that guy potentially. I mean, he this is a throwback here for the older people. He got his little Ruben Patterson to his game, you know. Maybe not the mean streak, but he's got that long, lanky, rangy body, and he's just got a nice stroke, man, a nice shot. Okay. So I know he wasn't too productive in Australia, but...
Yeah, 39% from three, though.
Yeah, you can see what he has there, you know? Like, there's some things to like. I'm surprised you didn't say Jordan Bell, actually, from Oregon.
Oh.
He's kind of like a traditional power forward, but...
Yeah, exactly. Now I'm trying to look for unorthodox people in the draft. Because that's what it feels like is, like, the next step in the league. Is just, like, somebody that's just unorthodox... that nobody can really tell or figure out what they're going to do. All the great players are in some way an unorthodox player. Like Steph Curry can shoot like crazy. Kevin Durant is 7 foot tall, but it plays like a shooting guard. LeBron is a small forward that is also a tank, that is also like an eagle, that is also... right, and then like, you know, like any player that, or Kawhi Leonard is half spider, half octopus, half shark, half, you know, man, half, you know, corn road assassin, right? So when you're looking at the draft, I'm trying to look for like these obtuse guys that like can contribute in a way that seems, you know, kind of weird, but also makes sense that they're like, it's hard to describe. It's hard to describe. Anybody looking in the draft, they're trying to look for the next Draymond Green, but like you're really looking for some guy that does multiple things well and is somehow an anomaly in doing those multiple things well. Like a power forward that can pass, that is like primarily a passer, that also shoots threes, that is also like a defensive monster, is very unorthodox, right?
Extremely, especially in the later picks. I mean, if you're the Raptors too and you don't necessarily believe that there's a player there at 23, you know, that can help you and you feel like you might slide in the second round, you could always possibly trade that pick to, let's say, the 76ers, because, I mean, the Sixers have picks 36 and 39, so you could package 23 for maybe both those second rounders. Mm-hmm. That might be another option. Just to go off what you're saying about the whole, you know, you're really looking for unorthodox, just different guys that may fit like a singular need. And for the Raptors, that need to be shooting, so...
Right, exactly. Or you're just looking for a guy, or maybe somebody that has, like, an edge. You know, like, Marcus Smart. Right, he was still, like, a well-touted prospect, but, like, one of his main things was, like, this guy has, like, a serious edge. Like, he makes winning plays, you know? Yep. He has a mean streak. He's a gamer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's like, all of those buzzwords, but, like, all those buzzwords point to, like, the intangible of, like, this guy is trying to win 24/7. Every ball that is a loose ball, he wants it, right? Anytime there is like a rebound that might, that's a 50-50, it's a 60-40 for him. You know what I mean?
100%, yes.
That's what you're looking for, when, especially late in the draft where they are at 23. So,
where do you see the Canadian going, Dylan Brooks? I know Draft Express has him at 35 to the Magic. Before this all got closer to the draft, I want to say about, you know, 2 months ago roughly, Draft Express had him at near the end of the second round. So obviously he's jumped up and impressing people. Where do you see him going?
Dude, for me, I'm going to be honest with you. I look at the draft, like the first 30 is like what I pay attention to the most. And then it has to be like somebody like super special for them, for me to like really be paying attention to them in the second round. I know he's a Canadian dude, right? And I should be, I guess I should, because he's from Mississauga, right? So like, I guess I should be like really paying attention to him a lot. But like, I don't know. I don't even think he played for the Ducks, right? Like, he never really popped for me when I was watching the Ducks play, because I did pick them to advance a couple rounds in March Madness. But I don't know. He never really showed me anything huge. He's kind of just like, you know, run of the mill. I hate to say that. Like, he just looks like a standard, you know, 6'6 dude, the small forward. You know, is average everything, average wingspan for a small forward. You know, average vertical jump. I don't know.
It's tough to argue against it. Like, I've seen Dylan Brooks play since he was at St. Martin's in Mississauga High School.
Right.
Used to play at the Valleys all the time there at the community center. Good kid, good player. His issue has always been his size, and it's not even his fault. Like, he's 6'7", but his wingspan's only 6'6". So he has this weird body where he is that size, and he's 215 pounds. He's kind of husky. Right. And he's not going to outjump you. He's maybe going to outmuscle in a few balls. He's just a really good player in an awkward body, if that makes sense.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of teams are just going to be reluctant to be like, well, where do we play this guy? It's kind of like Draymond Green syndrome all over again.
Yeah, and it's going to be hard. But the difference is, like, the wingspan is going to make it hard for him to defend people. Like, he's not going to be able to go up a position to defend people, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I mean, he was erratic at times at Oregon, where he would play with, like, the ball handler, and he would just make dumb decisions, to put it bluntly. And I guess it's, like, a little bit harder because, like, spoken with him a few times here, and like, you know, you don't want to not shit on a guy because you know him, but at the same time, like, he's such a nice guy that it makes it a little bit more difficult, I guess you could say.
Right.
And I'm just looking at it, I'm like, man, like, some of the games for Oregon, he was a ghost. Take the national championship game, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't even notice him out there.
Yeah.
Notice him. Like, those are problems that you just can't have in the NBA.
Yeah, dude. I don't know. I'll keep an eye on him because he's from our hometown, Mississauga.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think he gets drafted. Don't get me wrong.
No, I think he's gonna get drafted too. It's just, I'm gonna write his name down. I'm gonna follow him around the league. I'll probably have him. I have like a notepad. Anybody that knows me knows that I have like this yellow notepad where I have like basically anything basketball related. Any thoughts I have it written down on it. So I'll write his name down. I highlight it. I have a bunch of highlighters, and I'll follow him.
See, you've downgraded the yellow notepad. Before, it used to be a lot more descriptive describing it. Now it's just a yellow notepad.
I mean, I have this it's this huge yellow legal pad that has no,
there you go.
It has no margins on it, right? It just has all horizontal lines on it. And that's where I write literally every basketball thought. Almost every basketball thought I have is written down on it. And I have multiple of them now because I ran out. And then my friends, like, I told my friends I ran out of them and I couldn't find the notepad. And they actually went out to go look for it and buy a bunch of them for me. So now I have, like, 3 or 4 of them that sit in a stack. But, yeah. So I'm going to write his name down. I'll follow him. I'm interested. I didn't know he was from Mississauga. I knew he was Canadian, but I didn't know he was from Mississauga. So now I'm intrigued.
I'm happy you're intrigued now. And I'm happy you actually described your yellow notepad properly because before, you know, that was your pride and joy, dude.
Yeah, I mean, well, in the off season, it doesn't get as much use. But when it's during like the regular season or the playoffs, especially, like, I'm taking notes on literally every quarter of every game, right? So we'll see. You'll be in there.
Oh yeah, no, 100%. I mean, I'm excited for the draft tomorrow night, just because, you know, from Alonzo Ball storyline to all these trade rumors we're hearing right now. I know NBA offseason is unlike any other offseason out there, where the rumors are, man, Knots. Kazoos is that close. Knots.
Where is this person going? Are they going to make a trade? Who is getting drafted third to sixth? I don't know. Is Jason Tatum really that good? What about Josh Jackson? Will he ever develop a jump shot?
Right.
So there's a lot
of a friend of mine too who's in New York. He texted me and we were talking back and forth about you know, the Porzingis rumors and Phil Jackson. Is he crazy enough? He's trying to get fired. My buddy said to me, he goes, they'll nail Phil Jackson to Times Square and burn him alive if he trades Porzingis. I was like, okay, how do you really feel?
They love Porzingis, man. I love him too. And just like, you know, the fact that Porzingis doesn't talk to the head office about anything, really. Like, it's kind of like, you know, school for him. Like, he's in class, doing the training camp, doing regular season. And as soon as the thing ended, like the season ended, he's just like, peace. He just went home.
Well, like, here, give me your thoughts on that before we go. Because this situation is just, it's so Knicks. That's the only way I can describe it. And everybody's like, yeah, it makes sense now.
Mm-hmm. Give me your thoughts on that. Just the scenario in general? I mean, it's just like.
Well, what's going on with the Knicks?
It's a disaster. It's actually a disaster now because Melo hates the front office. He hates Phil Jackson. I don't know. There's nothing you can do to convince me that he doesn't hate Phil Jackson. He hates Phil Jackson. He hates the triangle. Kristaps seeing this, like, can you imagine this? Like, you're the new guy at your workplace, right? And there's this guy that's been working there for multiple years, right? And there was like an old boss that sucked, and the previous boss that sucked, and there was a previous boss that also sucked, and now the new boss is in, right? And the guy that has been, you know, the aged veteran dude that has been there for multiple years, he hates the new boss. And the new boss hates him. And then there's always, like, these, you know, microaggression jabs between the guy that's been there for multiple years and the new boss. And, like, they're going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And you're just a new guy. And you're just like, man, is this what happens all the time? And then people on the side are like, kinda, yeah. And you're just like, man, how many years of experience do I need to get, like, my next job, basically? That's where he is right now. Because he's not talking to anybody within the organization, right? And he's just like, they're trying to trade him. So if I'm him, if I'm Kristaps, right? I'm just like, man, how many more years until my next contract? Until I can leave? That's basically, I'm like, that's a disaster. If he's like an amazing player, like, I really think he's like probably the second, like, on a championship winning team, he's probably the second best, maybe best, if you have like a good surrounding cast. Best player or second best player on a championship team on your squad, and he's just like, man, I'm trying to wait until the end of this contract and be out of here. Like, they're trying to trade me already. Like, I don't understand. Like, if you're him, why do you want to be a part of the Knicks? Other than playing at Madison.
I think I can give a good way for you to say what his value is. If you're the Lakers, would you trade the number 2 pick for him?
Yes. Like, right now, maybe for Lonzo Ball, I don't know. But probably. Like, probably, yeah, I would. I'm like, okay, give me Kristaps.
There you go.
That's give me Kristaps, like, play Kristaps at center. I can finally play Julius Randle, and it, like, makes sense for me to play him, right? And then the second, like, they're probably going to suck next year. They're probably going to suck, but not that bad, so they don't lose their pick next year, because they have that, what, pick protection between 2 and 5. So maybe if they suck totally, like, if they don't totally suck, but they still suck, they can probably keep their pick and get, like, 2 to 5, and then get, like, another draft pick to go along with Porzingis, and plus you still have Larry Nance Jr., Julius Randle. I guess it doesn't make any. Maybe it might not make sense now because they lost Russell. But there's still, like, it's. I would still make the trade if I'm the Lakers. I don't think Lonzo Ball is going to be that amazing.
Yeah, and that tells you just right there alone how good of a player Porzingis is in terms of, you know, if you put him any other draft class, like, you put him, I think he goes number 1 if he's in this year's draft. But the point of all this is that he's still young.
Amazing.
He's still a great player.
He's amazing. A building block. He's amazing. Like, a cornerstone of your franchise, and they're about to trade him. Like, what's going on here? And you don't have, and he's one of those guys, like, you don't have to baby him, right? But you gotta, like, you know, be competent around him, bro. Like,
seriously.
Like, you just have to be, you know, Kristaps is gonna, like, the extent of how much you need to baby him is like, Kristaps, you do you. Right, and we're just gonna try and build up. Like, if this team sucked but it had direction, then he'd be fine, right? He seems like the type of dude, like, you know, whatever, we suck right now, but we got all these dudes, and you know, we're up and comers and we're gonna kill the league in a couple years. But right now he's just like, I don't know what's going on. Like, if I'm Kristaps, I'm like, what the hell is I don't know what's happening. Like, there's the
nobody does.
Like, there's the aging star that is just seemingly just collecting checks. He's gonna get traded. I don't know. Like, I don't know what's happening. I don't understand anything of what's going on anymore. And we don't even know if Phil Jackson. Maybe Phil. The conspiracy. Do you know what the conspiracy is on Phil Jackson?
There's been a few. So I've gotten lost reading some of these on Reddit and hearing them in podcasts. So feel free to enlighten me on the one that you're gonna say.
The conspiracy that I've heard that I like, I've heard it on Twitter and I've heard it on a podcast before, is Phil Jackson is trying to get fired so he can go back to the Lakers with Jeannie Buss and then be part of the next Lakers franchise or next Lakers like dynasty or whatever.
Could you imagine Jeannie, Phil, and Magic?
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
That's a Hollywood script if I ever heard one.
That'd be amazing. I mean, we're talking about like the start of a movie, basically.
Seriously, with Lonzo and LeVar?
Yeah, and then you know what would happen? He goes to the Lakers, right? And then the Lakers like build up this amazing team, and then like Kristaps goes to like the Celtics or something, right? And then they go head to head basically, and then Kristaps wins like two championships in a row over the Lakers.
You've gone too far. I've lost you.
That's the movie, man. That's the movie right there. That's the movie.
One final thing on Porzingis is Nate Duncan brought up a good point when he said that, you know, if you're the Knicks and you have no direction and you're basically pissing off one of your best players right now, maybe it's smart to part ways with him. I know it sounds crazy, but his value might not be any higher than now, because if he comes back next season and he's not happy and he doesn't want to play the triangle and he doesn't work and it's just a disaster, yeah, you're not going to get anything for him.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's right. The other side of the coin too. And I thought, like, you know, it's
scrap
a very
the fucking triangle, dude. Why are we still talking about the triangle? Like, that is, if I'm Kristaps again, like, why are we even talking about the triangle, man? This is not geometry. This is basketball. Okay, we should be playing pick and rolls, and I want some fluid sets where I can get the ball off screens and take jump shots or some sort of like pick and pops where I'm shooting threes. Like, why are we talking about the triangle? Why are we still doing post ups?
Seriously, put some basic motion principles in there with some screen and roll offense, and you're fine.
Like, I just want every action that I'm doing, I want the screener to be Porzingis. And if we're doing the triangle, there's minimal screening. Minimal. And we're not getting threes out of the triangle. Like, what's going on here, dude? Why are we running, like, 1989 offense? I just don't understand, bro. It doesn't make any sense.
You don't like it?
It's asinine, and it's asinine and it's archaic, bro. And if you have those two A's, like, you just need to scrap it. Just get rid of it. It just makes zero sense. None. Zero. Literally zero. I don't know what Phil Jackson is thinking anymore, man. I don't know if he's, like, I don't know if it's just because he's old and he's trying to do the get off my lawn type thing. Like, you know, back in my day, we used to, you know, climb two mountains, go through Marianas Trench and, like, you know, surf down the slopes to get to school or something. I don't understand. But, like, that's not gonna fly in the NBA, man. You can't just go backwards like that. It doesn't work like that.
Phil Jackson turning into what Toronto men like to call a waste man.
He's a waste man. Oh, he's a waste man for real, dude. This is crazy. Like, he's just running
the team. The man with so many rings has gone insane.
He's running the team into the ground. And if you're like James Dolan, then you're just like, this is gravy, bro. Like, how bad?
Yeah, he's even more psychotic, so he loves it.
Yeah, but like. He's great. I mean, he loves it because he's crazy, but he also loves it because, like, he finally has somebody to just, like, take the heat. You know, he's, like, off playing in his freaking band. You know, was it JD and the Straight Shot or something like that? And he's, like, he's playing in his band, and he's just like, yeah, my team's being run into the ground still, and we're still making ton of money, and I'm not the bad guy for once. Yay. That's what he's thinking.
I hate him.
His band sucks. Goodbye.
Like, yeah,
this is the tip of the tower podcast.
I have nothing nice to say. I have nothing nice to say.
This is the tip of the tower podcast. The Knicks suck. The draft is going to be interesting. We'll see you after the draft. Maybe we'll do a podcast after the draft or something. Just because you know something. Imagine, see how crazy it is right now before the draft. Imagine tomorrow when, like, you know, franchises are on the line and the Magic, the Orlando Magic, have to like do something to like salvage their jobs. I have a feeling there's gonna be some interesting trades.
So do I. And we could definitely come back and tee up free agency, discuss more NBA rumors, conspiracy theories. I mean, there's so much fun stuff with NBA right now that I feel like we could definitely do a few more.
Yeah. All right. We'll be back soon. We're back now. We've been on hiatus for like 3 weeks.
Well, we kind of fell in depression here because, you know, we realized that the NBA was ending and that the people out there that were saying the Cavs are going to beat the Warriors, we just kind of chuckled off to the side. Sipped our tea, you know, like Kermit the Frog, and we're just like, LOL. And then you realize after that there's still more basketball to go in terms of like free agency, interesting stuff. But before that, it was kind of like, yeah, it's just really anticlimactic.
Right. We got mental basketball to play now. Mental and monetary basketball. That's what we're playing at this moment.
GM mode, GM mode.
Yeah, everybody just fire up my GM, and that's what we're doing right now. We're trying to organize the trades and such. Anyways.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening, guys. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes or SoundCloud at Tip of the Tower. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Tip of the Tower. You can follow me on Twitter at Crystal Cranus, and you can follow DeMar on Twitter at DeMar J. Cranus. We'll see you guys after the draft, and hopefully we see some crazy stuff tomorrow night, guys, because it's been nuts so far. Until then, take care.
Later days.